Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the Voice of Change. I'm Sharon Ann Wyckoff, and delighted to be with you today. It is my honor to have with us Jyoti. She is the ambassador for the 13 Indigenous Grandmothers, and she is also the director of the Center of Sacred Studies. So stay tuned for a wonderful hour with her and learn more about both of those organizations. The Voice of Change brings to internet radio individuals speaking out on pertinent aspects of life during these very transformational times. During these programs, I interview spiritual leaders, enlightened teachers, educational professionals, visionaries, educators, birth therapists, cultural creatives, and artists. Guests share their perspective, their expertise, and their insights to support, encourage, and inspire new ways for these changing times. These times are asking us to live in greater harmony with ourselves, our loved ones, as well as with all on the planet. No longer can we live unconsciously. The time for conscious creating has come. And although there is much chaos taking place on the planet and the lives of many, the potential for greater understanding, for healing, and for change has never been greater. This is the time to be open to new ideas, new possibilities, and new ways of handling old problems. Individuals, as well as numerous groups, are working diligently to bring about this change on the planet. The journey into the new world begins with just one idea and one small step. Let's begin anew in each and every moment. It is such an honor for me to have Jyoti with us today on the program. She is the ambassador for the 13 Indigenous Women Grandmothers and also the spiritual director for the Center of Sacred Studies, which is a church dedicated to protecting and sustaining the spiritual practices of First Nation peoples around the world. She was one of the original conveners of the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers and is their ambassador. I want to welcome Jyoti to the program now and hear from her firsthand about all her wonderful work. Welcome, Jyoti.
Thank you. I'm so glad that I could be with you today.
I'm so delighted that you can be here, too. And you're traveling right now, aren't you?
Well, I'm in the process of getting back on my pony. I've had a precious little granddaughter of mine that just received a new heart. So I'm actually at my children's today helping them. She just came home after 8 months, and so we're learning how to, all the medical things that she's going to need and the special care. But we're starting to adjust and make our way through all of that, and then I will be traveling the entire month of March, so I'm leaving in just a couple of days.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we certainly wish your granddaughter well. It sounds like she's on her road to wellness.
She is, and as one of the grandmothers on our council, Grandma Aggie, said, she's imbued in every cell with prayer because we had thousands of people all over the world in many different languages and many different ceremonies, blessing and praying for her life. So I'm not quite sure what all she's come to do, but she certainly has gotten our attention in this first year of her life. So.
Oh, I can imagine. How old is she?
She just turned a year on Monday.
Oh, my goodness. Bless her heart.
Yeah. Yeah, bless her heart.
Yes, bless her heart, really.
Yes.
Oh, goodness. Well, that's beautiful. And it's so wonderful that everyone can come together in prayer for her.
Yes, and that's kind of the presence that she brings. So I'm really dedicated to her, as I am to all my grandchildren and to other grandchildren out there. That's what my walk in life is all about, truly, is the hope we carry for our children, for this planet, you know.
Yes. Please, won't you tell us a little bit about your own work, the Center for Sacred Studies, and then we'll get into the work that you're doing with the Indigenous Grandmothers.
Well, if it's okay, I want to tell a long story in a short kind of way, and it'll
of
maybe
course.
Put a, the fabric of how it all unfolded together, because they're all connected, you see.
Beautiful, yes.
Yeah, it was many years ago, and I would also like to say and just take a moment to recognize all those that might be listening today that this seed for what the grandmothers are carrying has been placed in every single one of us, and it's starting to awaken and rise up in all of us, and that's what's creating this, what they're now calling a global movement for world peace that is led by the grandmothers. So with that said, I want to go back to some time that when it was years ago when people were asking my husband and I, his name is Russell Park, to put together a community and to serve as the directors and founders for a spiritual community and a community that was based on prayer and on practices of the earth. I didn't think I was old enough or gray enough for such a thing, and so I went to three of my spiritual teachers, and I just said to them, you know, this is what's being asked of us. It's been being asked of us for several years, and I'm not quite sure what I should do. Should I go forward? And my only criteria was that one of them would say no to me, and if one of them said no, I wasn't ready, then I wasn't going to do it. So I went to these three teachers, and they said, yes, every single one of them, it's time, Jyoti, you must put yourself in motion this way. And so I did. And we went looking for land all over the place, all over California and into Colorado. We looked everywhere. And finally were brought to, through the synchronicity of many other people's dreams and visions and guidance, we ended up acquiring a piece of property in the Sierra foothills of 160 acres. And when we went up there, we were just given the mandate by our mother to create and take care of this beautiful land with the only intention that people would come to pray. And she didn't care what form their prayer took. She said, we are entering a time when it is most essential that everyone come back to sacred life and be centered in prayer. And so that's what we did. We opened up our place. We offered our teachings. I had a program called Stargate that was given to me through one evening, actually, when it just fell down and gave itself. And that program opened up a year before we went to live at Cayo Mori on this beautiful 160 acres. And I thought it might be a program that would last for a year. I was told it was a tool that would help to initiate and align those that were carrying the rose for our mother, that her warriors were coming forth in this time of change, but this time, instead of carrying a sword, they would carry a rose. And so with that in mind, we put it in motion. It's been 18 years later, and it's still out there in the world doing what it does for so many people and so many different layers of families. We have three generations of family members that have gone through the Stargate's trainings. It became a cornerstone for us to have a language that we could all speak to one another without misunderstanding, and it was a transformational tool that helped us awaken our own possibilities and come to our own authenticity. So with that program, it actually went like a little wildfire, and it went all over the world, and it created community behind itself. And this community we called Cayo Mori, and we didn't know at the time we picked the name for our place that it was Cayo Mori is the blue deer, and it's held in high esteem by the Huichols of Mexico. And they say wherever this little blue deer walks, medicines grow that will heal communities. And we have found that to be quite so. But we didn't know all that back then. There were three of us, and our intention was to go away for a couple of weeks and then come back with three possibilities of names. And when we came back, every single one of us had chosen Cayo Mori. So that's how it got to our community.
What synchronicity.
So much, so much. And as we began to study the land and understand more about the history of the land, we came to discover that this is the mountain up there where we were living is where all of the deer from all of that area came to foster their children and care for them. And so there were hundreds of deer, hundreds of Cayo Mori walking all over this land. So it became quite appropriate as well. So this then began our communities and my study in communities in so many different countries and languages. Kayamari jumped out, and in my inner experience, wherever mother is going to go, she sends Kayamari first so we can get the people ready, the land ready, the container ready for her to slip into and to do what she's come to do to help awaken things in that part of the earth. So we have Kayamari residents and community members that live in different places across the United States and on the East Coast. We have them in Germany and Switzerland. We have land outside of Prague, and we have a home in the Brazilian Amazon. So that's the footprint of Kayamari. As we began to do our work and as Stargate began to help us transform ourselves and to cleanse ourselves so we could hear better what instruction was coming our way, so we could connect and dialogue with creation more readily with every breath and every day, things began to show themselves. And in 1998, we opened up our ranch, the Kayamari community, in 1995. And in 1998, there were about 80 people that had come for a prayer service, and in the midst of that, Our Lady came, and she shared with me something she wanted us to do. She said, "I'm going to give you one of my most precious baskets, and in that basket, I'm going to put some of my most treasured jewels. Those jewels represent lines of prayer that go back to the original times. Do not mix them. Do not change them. Protect them and keep them safe, and walk them through the doorway of the millennia and hand them back to me. I have something we're going to do." Now, we didn't really understand this vision. It was way beyond where we were. But what we were also starting to get were promptings, a small whispering that was many people were beginning to hear, and it would say, "When the grandmothers speak, when the grandmothers speak." It didn't say anything else. It just said that. Get more of the story, but into our ceremonies and up to the land came people beginning to tell us of prophecies that stirred about a time of change that would be heralded in by the grandmothers, by the wisdom keepers of this planet. So with that in mind, up our 14-mile logger road, elders from many different traditions found us. We didn't go looking for them or seek them out. They literally found us and came to initiate us and train us and teach us about how to take care of the jewels in this basket. As that unfolded for us over the next years, we ended up finally with my daughter-in-law and my youngest son were being called to go to Africa to talk to the Bawidi people. And the reason this came about was because Dana had been studying in her master's degree about addiction, and she really was called to see how she could serve and heal this horrendous kind of disease that's finding itself through all cultures at this point. And it's really on the rampage here in the United States particularly. And so she was really called to address it, and when she got into the study, she realized that many of the programs that were set up out there would take care of you and they would open you, but it didn't go further. The recidivism rate was high. In that study, she found a plant called boga that did have a remarkable history. It had a way of life. It had teachings that went with it. And in our world, some of these healings are not just about a particular medicine or a particular tool that we might use or procedure that we might use in order to bring around healing. It's also about the teachings that creation has put around those tools that then give us a way of life that sustain the healing. So, that's what we mustn't forget about as well. So with that in mind, she was invited in to many programs, not just here in the United States, but outside of the country as well, to study about what this plant was teaching people and how it was offering healing for this disease of addiction. In the process, though, she became a little dismayed, and she came and we were talking one afternoon, and she said, "I found this and I found that in different programs, but I haven't found the right thing yet." And I said, "Well, in my world, what we would need to do, the way I've been trained up, is we would need to go as a family, and we would need to meet with the elders of the Bwiti people who take care of the iboga plant. And we would need to talk to them and see if we can actually work with this plant outside of its country. And how do we take care of it? What do we do? Would they teach us? Would they train us? So we can be respectful of the sacredness of the teachings there. So we, through many, it's a longer story. There were many different circumstances that ended up bringing us to Bernadette Ribeneau, who is quite well known across Africa and in other countries, particularly in Europe, in regards to her healings. And she's also an initiator of women's rites of passage. So she was also the president of Gabon, just recently died. But she was his advisor for many, many, many years. And so she is a diplomat as well and has done a lot to bring about an understanding about healing and medicine as held by the native peoples. So we found our way into Gabon, Africa, and we all went as a family. And I went there to witness the initiation of my children. So they had been accepted to take part in that. But in that process, I was asked to also be initiated, and so we all participated. In the middle of the initiation, this vision of the basket came back to visit me, and it wanted me to share what I had been getting, not only from the vision, but also all the things, the promptings about the whisperings, about the grandmother speaks, and this council of elder women, keepers of wisdom that we were being prompted that it was time to have. And so I shared all of this with Bernadette. She got quite excited and she said, "I'm having this vision too."
Oh,
and she
my.
Began to share with me a letter that she had just signed with the Hiawascanderos in Peru. And in that letter, it said that it was time for all First Nation peoples to stand up in solidarity around the globe and take back their natural birthright as caretakers of this earth. It was also time for them to declare that no one should be going into their forest, into their pharmacies, and taking their medicines without permission, and then patenting them and using them without the teachings and the way of life made them, that it was no longer okay for this to go on, that they were declaring a time, a different time that was entering the scene. They said, "We were here before governments came, and we will be here after governments leave, and it's no longer all right for these practices, as I've just described, to go forward. We now declare our solidarity as First Nation peoples around the world to care for the Mother Earth and to teach about how to do that." And so she looked at me and she said, "Jyoti, it's time. Go get this done." Well, I wasn't expecting that.
Oh, my.
Not at all. But I was on my way to the Amazon. I left for Africa and was on my way to the Amazon. I've been going there for almost 2 decades now and learning from these beautiful people in this little village called Mopia. And so I was on my way there to meet some of the elders, Maria Lisi and Claire, who are also grandmothers now on this council. And we were going to be on a little barge tooling down this little river called the Juduá into a very virginal area of the Brazilian Amazon. And it's a 3-day trek on the boat, and we had a lot of time to discuss. And they knew that I had gone to Africa and were quite excited and animated for me to tell them what had happened while I was there. So I began to share with them the story. They said, "George, what happened in Africa?" I told them everything that had gone on and what Bernadette had said to me. And then Maria Lisi got quite excited and animated, and she ran up to her little room on the barge and came back with a letter, and that her and her daughter Julia had just signed with 6 of the tribes in the Juduá region of the Brazilian Amazon. And this letter read almost word for word the letter I'd just seen in Africa. And they said to me, "Coach, it's time for you to go get this done." I went
my
this
goodness.
Mandate. I wasn't quite sure what to do with it. I must tell you, I feel like I'm a very simple woman, and I didn't know how in the world was I going to know which grandmother's universe is calling. Went into meditation, and after a short time, my grandmother started to whisper to me, and she said, "Granddaughter, you must start with the seed of it all, and the seed of it all is about relations. If you will start there, everything will unfold naturally. don't worry. So I sat down and I wrote a letter, and I sent it out to all of my community and all these places that I've told you about where it lived, and asked them to go to their elders and to speak to them about the vision, about what was being asked of us, and to see what grandmothers they would recommend. Now, there were 16 names sent to that time, and so we sent this invitation out to the grandmothers to meet with us in Phoenicia in upstate New York in the Dalai Lama's Medicine Buddha Retreat Center called Minla. It was in October of 2004. Described what I'm telling you now, and we gave the invitation and the call. 13 grandmothers accepted that call and came to New York in October 2004. I didn't know exactly what would transpire. We didn't have any more of an agenda except that we were supposed to gather the grandmothers there. That was all we knew. That's all. We didn't want to run ahead of what I say. I should never get ahead of myself, ahead of my own medicine. I should stay behind it and follow it, and then I will always be where Creator wants my feet to be.
Yes.
So with that kind of action, we came together, we met 3 days before we opened it up to the public, and in those 3 days of private counsel, the grandmothers asked me to come in and share this vision again, and so I did. And they accepted this basket and this mandate for the work that is now unfolding in the world. Now, Kayamari, our community, had grown up, and through the changes and evolution of it, we had created what we called a church, a 501(c) called the Center for Sacred Studies. And this church was put in place so that we could really protect our indigenous ways of life and their spiritual practices. And out of that then came the vision of the grandmother, and out of that came this amazing prayer in action, I would say, for world peace and unity of all peoples, which is now becoming this global movement. So I went to my board and my staff. We began to speak to them, and we found out that the grandmothers, if they had decided they wanted to become an NGO, that it would take 2 years after you claim yourself as a and are given all of the credentials to be a 501(c), that 2 years later, then you can apply and become an NGO if you wanted to go there. And we didn't know what the grandmothers were going to do at that point. We just knew that we wanted to come to them and say, If you want, you can have our 501(c). We'll step back from it. You can use it in any way that you want. It's yours if you want it. Mm-hmm. The grandmothers decided, no, that's not what they wanted. They wanted to stay what they like to say under the blanket of CSS, so that we could walk a little bit further down the road and see what we were going to do, what was being asked of us by creation. And so that's what we've done. We've made an amazing collaboration, and over the years have become really family and relatives and aligned with a mission for this Mother Earth and for our children and our children's children, those that are coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then what happened is Grandma Aggie, she said, girls, if we're going to take this on, then I think we've got to do is we've got to go to each other's home places so we can model how all of our differences are sitting at the table together, united behind a prayer for unity and peace. And then this way we will get to know each other's relatives and our countries and the fabric of our life that each of us shares and cares for. Now, I must tell you, I had to take a deep breath because it had taken us 2 years to raise the funds and to organize this event at Minla. And it cost about $250,000 every time the grandmothers come together. It's very expensive, particularly with all the transportation costs that have gone up over the years, and that each grandmother travels with a travel companion. Usually that's a family member. We have to have translators because every time we sit down at the table, this round table for the council, there are 7 languages being translated simultaneously.
Oh,
and then sometimes on top of that, if we're in the grandmother's country of another language, we have to have translation for the audience as well. So
of course,
it's been an interesting kind of mix of how to set something in motion, and it gives us many possibilities to understand each other, you see.
Yes.
But the place we must meet is in the heart, because our hearts are all in the same language. And so That's been the trial and the tribulation. Now, the grandmothers say that when you pray for unity, that which does not want to unite will make itself visible, and that's our work at that moment, is to embrace it and to lift it up and transmute it. And in doing that, we offer another healing, particularly towards the genocide of our peoples. Now, we've gone, the grandmothers have been marching to each of their home places. We're on our way to Alaska in May. That will be our ninth gathering. And then we will go to Brazil in October. So those are the two that are coming together in 2011. In 2012, the last of them will happen first in Montana in July, and then in, I think it's going to be November, it will be in Nepal, which is where one of our grandmothers come. Our grandmothers come from North America, South America, Central America, Africa, Nepal, Tibet, and high up in the cold country of Alaska, the Yupik grandmother, Rita, which is where we'll be going in May. And so if anybody wants to come and join in for 7 days of sacred prayer, there's four open to the public always, and then there's three that are open, that are closed for them to do their business and to continue dreaming what needs to happen and receive the messages it takes to move this to the next rung for itself. But our sacred fire will be burning all that time, and people come flowing in and out all day, hours of the day, in order to offer prayer. And amazing, amazing things take place, I must tell you.
Oh, I can imagine. It's such a rich gathering for people from all walks of life to join together.
Yes. And if people out there that are listening are feeling the calling to come and join us in any of these, they can go to thegrandmotherscouncil.org and push the event button, and it will give you all the information that you'll need to know about any of these travels. Now, the grandmothers also, in between gatherings, this last year, we arranged and helped coordinate 70 other events for them. So at the round table, there are 13 women. Part of them, half of them, I would say, are in their 70s and 80s. Our eldest is 86. And then part of them are younger grandmas, and they're in their youngest one is in her late 50s and 60s. So if you add up all their birth ages, you will come up with almost 1,000 years of wisdom sitting at the table, is the way they like it. They like to also say that every year they get 13 years older. So there you go.
Oh, this is just a remarkable story, just a remarkable story. And it all goes back to listening. I mean, the center around all this is really learning to listen, isn't it? So much of that. And do you do some of that, did you say, at your Stargate? With a Stargate training, teach people to listen and to really tune in to what the elders have to say?
I would say that all of our work, because we now also have a ministerial program, you can find out more about it by checking at CSSministryofprayer.org, and it's a two-year ministerial program, and I've been quite surprised. It's been full every year. We only take a certain number of students so that we can keep a very personal connection with everybody, but they're coming from all over the world. They're coming from Australia. They're coming from New Zealand. They're coming from, I think we have one up in Scotland and different parts of Europe. And so it's been amazing that we have, and the caliber of students coming is also quite amazing, because they are teachers, and many of them elder teachers, that are sitting in communities all over the world, and they're hearing the same calling. And so it's really about listening to the authenticity of oneself. And so I would say all of our programs are about alchemy, and we put people into an alchemical kind of vessel, and they tumble through at their own individual level of understanding, and come to that clear understanding and space of their own authenticity, because it's really about coming home to ourselves. As Grandmother Aggie says, the most important journey we are being asked to make right now is that 14 inches from our head to our heart. And when you make that journey and land in your heart, you will sit down in your authenticity. And that's really, really what it's about. If enough of us can sit down in that
authenticity. Mm-hmm. Then we will connect with our own ancestors and the root of our own being. And when we do that, then that's when the dream on this globe will change.
Oh, so true and beautifully put. Do you have any ways of bringing this down to the people that can't go into these sacred studies or who cannot visit? Something that, you know, we could all maybe say, okay, this is the way to go from the head to the heart. Any ideas along that line, or is it something that you really have to go into a, you know, complete program and study?
Well, I think there's many levels to that question. And the first one I would like to say, because I was just on a teleseminar last night with the grandmothers, we're doing a teaching for over 700 people from, I don't know, it's something like 30 different countries. And every week we get on this and speak. And this similar question was asked last night. And what the grandmothers will tell us is that right now it's about prayer. It's about what that first corn, that first kernel of understanding that we held as a community years ago, almost two decades ago now, was about prayer. So you can pray. You can pray when you're washing your tubs. You can pray when you're taking care of your children. You can pray while you're driving your car. It's about really getting into prayer. Now, you know, Lily Tomlin says when you pray, when you're talking to God, they call it prayer, and when God talks to you, they call it schizophrenia. I think that's what's gone on in our Western culture, is that we haven't allowed that cycle of dialogue to be complete. So we've kept it away from the power of the individual. And we've got to come back to the power of the individual, and we have to allow these circles of life to complete themselves. And so when you begin to get into a place of holding sacred prayer every day and realize that every moment is about prayer, then you're not just talking to God to ask God for something. You know, you're talking to God just like we're talking right now. You're having a dialogue. You're talking to creation. And when you start to take the veils off that have kept you muted from that dialogue, then you begin to realize creation is talking to us all the time. That's why you'll start, your dreams will become more vivid and more animated with teachings that will, and inspirations you'll wake up in the morning with. You may be standing out on the seashore, and all of a sudden the dolphin will come and do something that's quite remarkable to get your attention and to wake you up. And so a lot of what the grandmothers are doing right now is traveling around the world because they say it's time for them to shake the world awake. That really what's happened is something happened. We all ended up in this amnesia, sleep-like trance, and we disconnected from the soul of who we are. And we're living in this flat world that's all about intellect, and that's not who we are, and that's not what we're about. Our mind is a tool for the soul. It's not the other way around. So we have to start to do spiritual practices of one form or another. And if you can do something as simple, ritual, as take a glass of water, and every morning when you awake, you can go out and meet the sun in that new day and thank the earth for allowing you to be there one more day. And then say whatever prayer comes from your heart, not your head. Maybe it's a prayer of gratitude for just waking up today. I'm waking up every morning now and saying, you know, thank you, Creator, because my little grandbaby through a treacherous walk, and in that process has taught us so much about coming back to our hearts. Mm-hmm. That's what her whole voice has been around, the first year of her voice, is a concentrated effort to make people see, come back to your hearts, how important it is to come back to our hearts for life to go forward. And then when you finish your prayer, you offer four sips of that water to the earth first. You feed the mother first because she feeds us. And then take that blessed water into yourself. Now, Grandma Aggie and all the grandmothers right now are heralding that the most important action right now is going to be about our water, that our water is the mother's blood source, and we have not taken care of it well, and we must come back to a place where we are paying attention to that she's a live being. And if we don't tend to her and care for her in the right ways, if we don't watch out what we put in our waters and our air, then we are not going to be making it as a human race. So, you know, we are an endangered species right now. And
Very true.
We really have to accept what's going on here. The Mother Earth, I feel the Mother Earth will at some point have to shake us off in order for herself to survive, because she will.
Mm-hmm.
And the new age that has been prophesied for thousands of years, it's here. It's not something we're waiting for. It's here.
Yes.
In the midst of a great purification. You know, when we call the grandmothers together, I didn't know 13 grandmothers had been prophesied by many tribal people all over the world. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
As we came together and they began to share in the first gathering, Grandmother Rita Blumenstein, whose gathering we will be going to in Alaska this very shortly in May, she sat down and told us a story about when she was 9 years old. Now, she was telling us the story then, and she was about 73. And,
I love this story. It is so beautiful.
When she was 9 years old,
yes,
her grandmother sat her down and said, "When you get old and gray like me, you're going to be called to sit on a council of 13 grandmothers. I have gone and made 13 sacred bundles, and I've put my sacred stones in them, and I've gathered 13 white eagle feathers, and you must care for these until that time. And when that time arrives, and you will know it, then you must pass these bundles to each and every grandmother and take one for yourself and know that I am standing behind you, and so are all of our ancestors, and the time we've been preparing for is here, and it's now." As Grandmother Rita told us a story, there wasn't a dry eye in the audience amongst any of us, and she was crying as well, and she said, "We're late, but we're here."
We're late, but here. Oh, that is just so beautiful. When I heard that story, I thought, what an amazing way of listening. You know, she was told when she was, 7 years old, about this, and the wisdom that she knew, the wisdom that her grandmother had, was just remarkable.
Well, you know, it's a different world. Our First Nation,
yes,
has a different way of being in the world. They have a different language for it.
Yes.
They live with it differently. They have a regard for it. So
yes,
everything's sacred. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
every message given to one is sacred. And it's matriarchal. Most First Nations are based on a matriarchal system. And so the grandmother is the one that walked the longest, had the most experience,
yes,
and is there to guide those coming behind her. That's the
mm-hmm.
way she's seen and held and revered. Each and every one of our grandmothers that are sitting at this table in their own place have done amazing, amazing things against all odds. And I'll just give a couple examples, you know,
please,
like Grandmother Tsering, our Tibetan grandmother. Of course, most out there by now know the situation that's unfolded in the last 50 years with our Tibetan brothers and sisters, and they lost their land, they lost their lives, they lost many of their children. And Grandmother Tsering was one of the first original women that formed the Tibetan Women's Association. It now has 46 centers around the world. And they were placed so that they could help their own family members and that are their Tibetan relatives come out and find a new place to live during this difficult, challenging moment,
mm-hmm.
and helped many countless people. She escaped having to leave one child in the school there, because if they pulled out that child, the Chinese would have understood what was going on, and she might have put in danger the rest of her children. And
mm-hmm.
she had to walk with them on her back for days and nights over the mountains to get to safety in India. And so, you know, she met that challenge, and through that work and through that life, she has a wisdom that was cultivated and she now shares. She's a beautiful being. And when we went to Dharamsala and she was hosting the grandmothers there, we met with the Dalai Lama and all of the high officials of the Tibetan people came to meet the grandmothers, to greet the grandmothers. And I'll never forget that moment when the Minister of Culture said to us, the Dalai Lama would find it quite a privilege to be considered one of the jewels in this basket.
Oh, my.
And so that's the way the work has unfolded. So I think it's really, you know, I think it's if you come to oneself, if you do your work to shed that which is false self so it can fall down, so that you end up back returning to the original source of who you are,
then automatically that dialogue starts to happen and a way of life unfolds that sustains your life in a very, very different way. And instead of living out of a consciousness of scarcity and not enough and what ifs and need for knowing outcome and expectation, which are all generated by a false self,
yeah,
and a feeling of fear instead of love. When we let go of all that and we end up back in our original self, where love is the core, love is the energy, love is alive, and it speaks to one, and it generates and sustains a different way of living with life, then we end up in that place where there are no separations, that everything is connected.
Mm-hmm.
It's why they have the proverb that says, you know, the butterfly moves his wings in one part of the world, there's a tornado in the other. They're all connected. They're all connected. Everything's speaking. Right now, we're all connected. And as we get on the internet, which I really think is, it can be a sacred technology if we will hold a mind state that way, then it really is a web of life that's going out across the globe and connecting all the different dots, all the different points of light, if you will, that are lighting up right now, making a vote for a new world that's centered in love and harmony and unity. That's what we're voting on. Now, all along, a lot of people have been talking about this new vision coming, this new world coming, but they're still fueling with all of their resources, with their money, with their behaviors, with their actions. They're still fueling the old paradigm. And we're out of time for that. We're at this moment right now where we must flip the switch. We must flip it over and put our money and our actions and our prayers and our life towards living and being the new world, not just talking about it anymore. We have to embody it.
To be.
I think that's all, and that's really, you know, when vision comes to speak to you, if you're trying to still move through it, like you're trying to go get it, or you're trying to acquiesce something, you're trying to see if you can get that for you, then you're still in the old paradigm. But if you sit down behind that vision, if you follow it, even when you don't know where it's taking you, even when the places it's taking you are sometimes challenging and difficult, but you know it's right, then you're making a vote and you're walking down that road towards that new world that is already here amongst us.
Yes, it all begins with the awareness of the moment, doesn't it? To really be present in the moment.
I think that's the only thing that really is, is the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What we do with that moment perpetuates the next one. So, and life is about choice. You know, we can choose to stay asleep, we can choose to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
We can choose when somebody comes and I have a lot of people that will say, you know, they're living in love and they're making that, and then somebody comes to challenge that somehow by... The universe sends them a test, you know, and sends them somebody that's just really nasty and gets in their face and pushes all their buttons. It's that moment when our peace work is most essential.
Yes,
it's that moment when we must take a deep breath and not get caught up in that other story and not figure out where we're getting triggered, because Kubler-Ross said that if somebody pushes your button and you become upset for more than 10 seconds, you have unfinished homework there. And when we hold that kind of attitude, we own that we are the ones responsible for what's happening. It's not somebody else out there. If we want peace in the world, then we're going to have to make peace in ourselves. We're going to have to live the consciousness of peace every day, and we're going to have to love ourselves when we can't. You know, it's about being compassionate. Compassion is our medicine of the time, and forgiveness, our grandmas would say, you know, that's history. That's done. It's time to set all the stories down right now, this moment, and just open up the door and make a new one. See what new one's coming to us. Embrace it. Love it.
So beautiful. So much wisdom in all that you have shared. A wisdom that so many, you know, in the Western culture are not used to.
That's, you know, I think it's because our Western culture mostly has gone on a pathway of the mind, and that's an important study. It's not to make any of it wrong. It's not to make judgments about anything, because if we do that, then we're still living in a lower
part of our consciousness. We're still pointing fingers. And as my old teachers say, when you point a finger, look and see there are three fingers pointing back at who.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to really take a moment and realize that everything we've done is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that happened to me. I had some things go on in my personal life when I was coming up as a young woman, you know, that I got caught in an abuse syndrome, and I got caught in that. It was part of my study. But that's what made me who I am today.
Yes.
You know, and I worked in the streets of Texas for 13 years with difficult scenes and situations for children.
Mm-hmm.
They're the mystics of our country that are locked up in either institutions for the mind or institutions for criminal activity. But they're all the same. They're all children that have been victimized and tortured, most of them. And so I began to see, though, that there was something in these children that was so alive. There was something in these children that was so on. It was just turned on. Because if not, they should have been dead. They should never have survived the stories I was hearing. And that's what really generated and woke up something in me. It was the light in those children.
Yes.
And that's what woke it up in me. And
it's so true. All of our experience brings us to who we are today.
Yes, and so it's really about acknowledging that and allowing ourselves to see that for what it was, a study. It's just, life is, you know, we're all students of life, and it's a study. It's this earth school about how, as Grandmother Rita says, we're moving from a time of being animalistic, because we've all been living out of our third level chakras, our first three chakras. Mm-hmm. And that's all about survival. That, too, was a study. But now we're about to burst up into the heart, and that's a place that takes us into our spirituality, and it takes us into our humanistic kinds of being. And so that's where we are. That's where this planet is right now. You know, when I traveled to India, and they could say we're in the Kali Yuga time, the final days of the dark purification moment, and that we've been living in those first three chakras, and now we're taking this great leap into the heart, and we'll just have to get kicked up in there, because it's a big leap. We have to leave a whole different way of consciousness in order to arrive in the heart. You have to really allow yourself to let go of your story, to realize that we're all making a story, so we have a way of relating with each other. And if you go traveling very much and go around all these places, it's amazing the different stories. You know, there's some very difficult stories going on right now on our planet, some very difficult stories. But there's also very amazing stories, and miracles happen every day. My granddaughter is a miracle walking.
Oh, yes.
She's a miracle walking. She wasn't supposed to be here. She almost left many, many, many times. She's a miracle walking around in our house. She's a miracle. And miracles aren't something of non-ordinary beingness. They are an ordinary experience.
Right, right, yes. So beautiful. You know, we have just about 7 or 8 minutes left. And I know throughout the program you kind of scattered the little kernels that people can take into action right now to learn to live in the heart rather than the head. Can you just review a few of those so people will have something very concrete to take away? The first one being, I believe you said, is going into prayer.
It's about prayer and relations. I think it's the kernel of it all. If you can realize that you are in relation with absolutely everything, doesn't matter if it's animate or not, everything has consciousness around us. And so when we begin to understand that interrelatedness amongst all of our scene around us, around our world, and then we start to center ourselves in prayer, then what you need will come to you. It will come and stand right in front of you, and that's when you must embrace whatever it is. It might be a challenging moment. It might be a glorious moment. It might be a very subtle whisper.
Yes.
It might be a loud shout. It's really about accepting acceptance. It's about embracing. It's about allowing. It's not about forcing. It's not about pushing. It's not about trying. It's about allowing. And that's a very different attitude to take into your daily practice. And as you do that, then what you need will show up in front of you. And if you can have the courage to embrace whatever that is with your heart instead of your mind, you will get different outcome. But all of my teachers across the realms have always said one rule for me. If you want a healing, then you must enter it with no expectation for outcome. Because if I have an expectation for outcome, if I'm going to do this so I can learn that, so I can get that, then I'm already in my ego. I'm not sitting in the self. The self allows. It doesn't go with agendas. I don't have an agenda. I still don't. At the end, in 2004, we're given this mandate, and the grandmother said we're going to each other's home place. That's all we know right now. At the end of 2012, we will have done that. What will happen next? We don't know. We're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to peek around it, because if I do, then my ego will try to determine something. That's what egos do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. So it's really about staying in the moment, staying centered in yourself, realizing, living in the sacred witness, which observes and allows you to see when you're not sitting in that place without judgment. It just says, oops, I was out of my center again, and you call yourself right back down. It's about not utilizing the energies of guilt and judgment. Those are the energies that will drive us into a smaller self. So it's about when you look at the world and you just see it for what it is. Maybe the clerk is just a grumpy old man. That's just the way he is. Well,
yes.
The way he is. It helped me because the mother said to me one time, everyone is an herb in my garden. Your only job is to potentiate that. I will decide where to put my herb and how to cook up my soup. You don't do that. I decide
mm-hmm.
that. You
mm-hmm.
surrender that to me. And so then I could see all the herbs. I could see the prickly herbs that were more like cactus people. I could see the fragile herbs that were more like lilies or orchids. I could see the aromatic, the ones full of aroma, the ones that were very out there, like the rose smell that comes from some. They were all different herbs, but that helped me so much to understand that and to see people just for who they were. And when I do that with myself, then I can allow that same perception with others. But I must first start with myself. All the work of consciousness is really right here at home with yourself. So if you take a moment and take your hand, touch your heart. That right there, that's the first place to start. And out of that place, your sight will come.
Oh, Jody, absolutely beautifully said. Thank you so much for this wonderful hour with you. It has been such an honor.
Oh, thank you for having me. And for all of you out there, again, I just want to say a moment, come join us, come have fun with us, come pray with us, come play with us, come work on yourself with us. You can find out more information about the grandmothers through grandmotherscouncil.org. You can find out more about who we are as a community and what we're trying to serve in the world through sacredstudies.org. And you can find out more about our online ministry program through cssministriesofprayer.org. And when you find out about us and we connect, and we get to find out about you, and that circle feels good again. So keep your circle flowing. Keep the giving and the receiving happening. And a full circle is where we are. May
beautiful.
It be you.
Beautiful. Thank you so very much. And I hope to meet you one day.
Oh, that would be my great pleasure.
It would be mine, too.
Thank you, Sharon, and for
all
the
right.
work you're doing and all the listeners out there. Have a beautiful day. Remember, it's a good one.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. What a beautiful hour. I want to let you know, again, you can reach Jyoti and the grandmothers, the 13 Indigenous grandmothers, at www.grandmotherscouncil.com. And then Jyoti's work and the Ministry of Sacred Studies at www.csministryofprayer.org. And you can also reach them at sacredstudies.org. Wonderful hour with Jyoti. I want to let you know about the upcoming programs. On March 3rd, I am going to have back Master Tien Jia from Tien Gong, and she's going to be talking about the healing of the liver and doing an energy healing transmission, and she will also talk about Wen Shui. That is on March 3rd at 1 p.m. On March 4th, I have Matt Kramer with us. He is an author, an alternative health care practitioner, and mediator who works in private practice and has mediated for family service agencies and the California Superior Court. He says that mediation is a very effective tool in parent-child communication. In addition to discussing the nature of this often miraculous process, Matt will also share communication and problem-solving skills that can help transform your house of conflict into an oasis of collaboration. That is Matt Kramer, and he will be March 4th at 11 a.m. On March 11th, I have Joy Metcalf with me. She is a teacher of Buddhism in the Northern California area. On March 18th, we haven't confirmed it for sure, but I believe Sandy Goodwin is going to be with me. She is a facilitator, teacher with the Fearless Living Institute, and works particularly with people in gaining their developing self-confidence. And then on March 25th, Kurt Abraham is going to return to the Voice of Change. Kurt is the author of 11 books, one of them being Achieving Quiet Mind, Meditative Techniques and Exercises to Offset the Problems of the Worried Mind, the Busy Mind, or the Distracted Mind. His show is very popular, and so we're returning for part two. So that is going to be on March 25th at 11 a.m. Want to thank you all for listening to The Voice of Change. Know that all of our programs are archived. You can go to the archives and listen to programs. This one with Jyoti, Ambassador to the 13 Grandmothers. You can also hear the one with Master Tien Jia from Tien Gong. And she will be coming up again, of course. Also, I have archived programs with birth therapists, educational therapists, from many, many different modalities of teachings. So thank you again for listening, and please know that this is the first day of the rest of your life. I invite you to live it consciously with love and gratitude. See you next time on The Voice of Change. Bye for now.